conversation with queer identified writers about their works and lives.
Welcome to Queer Words. This is Wayne Goodman, and on this episode, I have the delightful pleasure of conversing with Jeffrey Dale Lofton. Hey, Jeffrey.
Hi, Wayne. I'm so happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Could we start by having you tell our listeners just a little bit about yourself?
Absolutely. I grew up in Warm Springs, Georgia. You probably know it better as the home of Roosevelt's Little White House. I live in Washington, D.C. now. I have for over three decades. During my early years here, I was a professional actor. I trotted the boards of some of D.C.'s finest theaters. I even scored a Super Bowl halftime commercial, which my accountant wisecracked was the finest work of my career. I stepped away from that life to pursue other things that interested me. I got a master's in public administration and one in library and information science. And now I work at the Library of Congress. I've been there for a number of years. I am a senior advisor to the Chief Human Capital Officer. All during that time, I've been a writer. I never told anybody. I finally finished a novel that I started many years ago, which is called Red Clay Susie.
This is Queer Words, and I do ask my guests, what qualifies you as queer?
I am gay, but more than that, the way I view the world is not gay or straight. It's a sensibility. It's a way of feeling. It's a way of relating to other people, all people. I identify as part of a community that is diverse and connected to each other in a way that transcends sexuality, race, or ethnicity. I think of that as queer.
When did you first accept being queer?
I don't know. It's been a gradual process. Understanding the difference between being gay and queer helped me do that. And I really didn't even question it until the last several years. I would say it's been several years now, but not my entire life. As a younger person, I didn't know what being gay was. There were no examples in my life. I grew up in a very conservative, small community. It seemed like a lot of energy went into helping me towards the right path. They knew that I was different, but they also were well-meaning. They were trying to help me navigate a world that would not be kind to me and others like me. And I think that they were responding to the queer part of me, not the gay part of me. I doubt that they thought of it that way or even examined it in enough detail to think of it that way. And probably didn't, as I didn't at that young age, understand there was a difference. In the years since growing up, accepting my sexual identity, have come to appreciate the community that gay part of me belongs to, and that's the queer community.
Would you have some queer hero figures?
I am by nature a very shy, introverted person, and I have always admired renegades, trailblazers, and there are so many of them, especially from the 1980s. Larry Kramer, who would not stop because he was on a mission. He was passionate about saving lives, doing what he thought was the right thing. I have to respect him and all of the people who stood by him, beside him, behind him, in front of him. RuPaul is another hero. I knew of RuPaul in the 80s because RuPaul spent time in Atlanta. There's a lot of footage, a film of RuPaul in that community in the 1980s between Atlanta and New York. It's fascinating to watch him as a younger person navigating the early part of his career. So bold, so outspoken. Frank Kameny, who lived in D.C., I got a chance to meet him a few times years ago. Some of my queer heroes wouldn't identify as queer, but allies. Being a queer ally was also difficult. There were many of them in the spotlight. There was, of course, Elizabeth Taylor and Judy Garland, those who everyone knows. But it takes a special kind of generosity to stand up for people who are the underdog. And I admire that. Bette Midler is also such an advocate. She's such an environmentalist as well. She stands for something. Got to appreciate that.
What about literary influences?
I love James Baldwin. That he wrote so openly and boldly and did not conform to the rules. Another hero, Virginia Woolf. Walt Whitman, such pure beauty, simple, uncluttered poetry. His work has been a huge influence on me. But the other end of the spectrum is Oscar Wilde. I've been transfixed by his writing, especially being a former actor. His plays are delicious and so beautifully clever.
What inspired you to begin writing?
I've always been a writer. I just never told anybody. When I left home for college, LaGrange College in LaGrange, Georgia, a very small liberal arts institution, it was only 30 miles down the road, but it was the first time I was away from home. Being away from home had this effect of all of the humiliation and shame that I felt living in this small conservative community where I was bullied and body shamed came exploding out. I've described it as a dam bursting in my head, these horrible white hot memories coming out. By instinct, I turned to writing, journaling, really. It came out looking and sounding like a novel, although I had no idea at the time that I was writing Great Clay Susie. But it helped save me. It comforted me. It was cathartic. I think of it as an exorcism by exposition. It was cathartic. I put it aside when my coursework took over. It took every moment I had, all of my mental energy. I had every intention of going back to the writing after a semester or so. I got my college sea legs under me. But I didn't go back for decades. I was writing all that time. I wasn't writing Ray Clay Susie. What happened? Fast forward to Washington, D.C. I read two books in succession. I reread To Kill a Mockingbird, that incandescent story of another outsider, Scout Finch. I had a shock of recognition, that outsider child that I hadn't noticed when I read it as a younger person. Then I read Call Me by Your Name by Andre Asiman. Those two books together, the power of literature for me, it broke me open. I was 19 again, dealing with all of that that I had suppressed, and I went back to the journals and reread them, all of that raw emotion that had spilled out into them. I decided I need to finish this in order to get through all of what I'm feeling. I started writing again. I wrote the first draft on my mobile phone on the subway going to and from my job at the Library of Congress. That was how I did it. I started writing it for me, but I finished writing it for younger people who are having such a horrible time of it now as I did when I was that age.
How does queerness impact your writing?
It gives me intention. It helps me not just tell a story, but tell a story for a reason. This book, being essentially a fictionalized memoir, I wanted to put one more story out there that is affirming, uplifting, and ultimately satisfying and funny, I hope, a good story. I wanted to create a roadmap, not for a car to travel on, but a roadmap that a young queer person could follow in their own heart, in their own mind, to navigate difficult times. Because the key, as much of a cliche as it is, getting to the next day, that's how I survived. That's how being queer shapes how I write.
When it comes to writing process, do you like to start with an outline and work from that structure? Or do you sit down and start typing? Or maybe a combination of the two?
I've tried so many approaches. I always create an outline, but I never stick to the outline. But I find having the outline helps me stay in the world that I want to inhabit with the story. Giving myself permission to veer off course allows for some creativity. Why would a writer want to suppress that impulse? I'm more of a pantser than a plotter, but I do at least have a little bit of plot tacking it all together until I get it where I want it to be.
If people want to read your book, where can they find it?
Ray Clay Susie is available any place that sells books. Independent bookstores, of course. Big advocate for independent bookstores. But you can also find it on Amazon, bookshop.org, IndieBound, any place that sells them. Hardcover, audio, book, and digital.
I hope you have some of your writing you can share with us.
I would love to do that. This is from Ray Clay Susie. The book is in three parts. This is from part three. When Philbert is almost 16 years old. He hasn't had his 16th birthday yet. In this scene, he is talking with an older boy he idolizes to distraction. And that boy's name is Knox. Philbert has a physical deformity of the chest, and he spends every waking hour trying to hide his body, both the inside of him and the outside of him. Knox doesn't know about this condition that Philbert suffers from. In this scene, Knox wants to go swimming. There's the conflict. One other thing, Knox has a nickname, Dwarfovit Keebler. "Let's go swimming," Knox said. I avoided swimming because it's a shirts-off activity, so I said, "I don't swim." "Oh, I'll teach you," he offered. "That's okay. Everybody needs to know how to swim." "I know how, I just don't." "Why not?" "Water gets in my ears." "Well, earplugs." "They don't really work," I countered. "Oh, come on, Keebler. It's so hot." "Okay, you don't have to get in, but you're coming along. Let's go." And with that, he pulled me out the door by the hand, and then he guided me towards the woods, his hand on the small of my back. And I followed him down a steep but not deep gully and into a mostly dried up creek bed. And then we turned and we were in the open, the sun suddenly making us squint after having been in the cool shade of the piney woods in a beautiful dark green lake spread out with woods on all sides. He sat down on the bank and he started to pull off his shoes. "Let's go in." "No," I said, way too abruptly. "Well, you don't have to put your head under." "No." "Well, okay." Before I lost my courage, I admitted, "I don't want to take my shirt off," thinking the only thing worse than telling him about my deformity was to leave him thinking I was a total weirdo. "Oh, it's just, I never done that, and it's because of my Keebler. It's okay." But then, before I could talk myself out of it, I took my shirt off, my chest fully exposed in the sunlight, and I just stood. "See?" He didn't talk. He just stared. My teenage fantasy was looking at what I spent hour after hour trying to hide. "Say something," I thought. "Does it hurt?" "Only when you don't touch it." Oh, I said it without thinking. "What?" "Nothing, never mind, just forget it." I had never felt more exposed than I did right then. My shirt off with my white, pasty, skinny, malformed bird chest in full view of the boy I loved. I didn't even know if he liked boys, much less freaky me. And the sun hurt so much because I couldn't hide. And the cavity in my chest was already a smaller space than my heart needed function, just felt more compressed and restricted than usual. But I cherished this moment as much as I hated it. I mean, it hurt so much. Both the blood pumping heart in my chest and the feeling heart, the one I wanted to give to him. Was I going to die right here in front of him? If I didn't take this chance now, I never would. And if he didn't reject me after seeing my half-sunken chest, I could trust him. Could believe anything that happened after that. But he just stared at me, and I couldn't look back. And as embarrassing as it was, the pain was not because I was disfigured and all my organs were fighting for room. I ached because someone finally saw me.
What's your involvement in the queer communities?
I have a wide circle of friends who are queer. I try to be a good member of the queer community and be involved. I march in the DC Pride Parade with LC Globe, which is the LGBTQ social organization library. I've written a lot of pieces that have never seen the light of day, but the intention behind them was to send them out to journals, newspapers, or someplace to make a statement, a commentary. I've sent some things out.
How do you use social media to promote your work?
I'm navigating social media. I'm not an expert, but I try to promote other people and their work so that it's not just a commercial about me, but it's highlighting the work of others, the causes of others, to support them, to help them reach their goals. I try to post every day, photographs, videos, repurposing stuff that I find from other people that I think is important, interesting, and would help someone else, not just the person who's posted originally, but people who might benefit from that information. I haven't been actively involved in social media until I knew a book was going to come out, and I thought, well, I need to connect with other people. The literary community, it's very important. Shockingly, even though I haven't really met all of them in person, I've met quite a few people virtually who I feel I know pretty well. I think it can be used for good, a connecting tool, although I know that it can be used for just the opposite as well. I'm glad that we have those tools available to us.
What do you like to read?
Oh my gosh, I like to read. I love fiction. I enjoy fiction more than nonfiction. One of the surprising things about this whole publishing journey is meeting authors whose work I've read in years past. They're superstars to me. They're Meryl Streeps to me. To meet some of them and be in the same room and have conversations has been such a shock to me. The community has been very welcoming. I love queer fiction. Zach Sala is a novelist who I know now. He lives in D.C. I enjoyed reading his book. I love reading memoir. I love to read young adult work. It can be very complex, though written for younger people. It can be very satisfying for an adult reader, too. So Nima Avashia wrote a memoir called Another Appalachia. It's so good. It's such an important work. Nima's parents immigrated from India, and she grew up in Appalachia. She's now an educator. She has been for 20 years in the Boston public school system. Her memoir is about her life growing up and then going to Boston and becoming an educator and navigating her life there and meeting the love of her life. Very powerful. Rashid Newsom wrote My Government Means to Kill Me. It's fiction. Such a good book. It's historical fiction. Larry Kramer is a character in the book set in the 1980s. Zach Sala and Let's Get Back to the Party. I love the structure of this book. It's very symmetrical. There are two protagonists and the way that they interact with each other and have known each other for years. And then the relationships they have, friendships, and how those friendships circle back and touch the lives of the other protagonists. Very interesting and structurally very compelling. Very good story. I love Rebecca Mackay's work. Honoré Jeffers, beautiful writer. A young adult book that I really enjoyed, The Honeys by Ryan LaSala. He's written quite a few young adult books. They're entertaining, they're dark, queer, really great. Bushra Raymond, Roses in the Mouth of a Lion, very good. I mentioned the book because I read them and then I met the author, which was a treat.
Do you have any words of wisdom to pass along to other queer writers?
My words of wisdom to queer writers would be what I would say to any queer person. The process of writing, I don't wait to be inspired by the muse, I write. The time that works for me is when I, on my telephone, I write most of what I write on the telephone early in the morning. Even if I don't feel compelled to put anything to the keypad, doing it is the important part because ultimately it unlocks something in me. That's the goal, is to get it out of you, whatever it is. You may not use it. You may not use 10% of what you write, but if you don't put anything down, you don't have anything to show for it. Writing primes a pump of creativity. It's not as if that creative flow will ever stop. I don't think it will. The more that you write, the more comes, the more that you produce, the more material there is that comes out of you, because we've all lived such lives full of ideas. Find out what time and how to write works for you and do it. Just write. Write, 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 put it out there. The general advice would be what I wish I had known when I was younger. Bullies are as afraid of the world as you are. Once you realize that, they lose some of their power, some of their sovereignty. Given that I grew up trying to hide not only the inside of me, but the outside of me, I would say that your body, whatever imperfections it has, whether they are real or perceived imperfections, treat your body with care and kindness and love as you can so that it will take you as far and as long as it's able. Also, true love is never wrong. Bravely bestow it on whomever is worthy of the gift. That's what I wish I'd known growing up, and I didn't.
I will say thank you, Jeffrey Dale Lofton.
Thank you for having me. This has been such fun.